just me, but that open bumper sounded awfully loud tonight, crystal clear. This is Careless Whispers. It's CLNS Media. My name is Matt Rury. I hope everybody had a nice 4th of July holiday. Calvin, I hope you celebrated the 4th in a festive manner. And that's the reason we were off last week. A pretty rare 4th of July Tuesday fell right on our show. And a lot has happened since we've spoken on the air here, in the NBA in particular. Calvin Chamberlain, my co-host as always, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ray. How are you doing? You want to start off with the music? I mean, I don't know what kind of mood you're in right now, but maybe you're in a good. I mean, it's been 2 weeks. Maybe the furor over getting Gordon Hayward has died down, but maybe
the furor over getting Gordon Hayward. So, Calvin, I'll tell you, I'm not sure what kind of a mood I'm in to talk about the NBA right now. To be honest with you, my head is in a pretty good place. It feels good about the Celtics. I think they're going to be a pretty good team. But my heart and soul has left, Calvin. My heart and soul is gone. I don't know. I don't know what to do. I can't follow my heart and soul to Detroit because that is a terrible place, as far as I know. I've never been there, and I don't want to go. My heart and soul, of course, on the basketball court is Avery Bradley, and I had a horrible day when he was traded, Calvin. It was a horrible day. Everything was going wrong that day. And then I heard about that, and it just made everything even worse. And I was just depressed all day. Ask anybody I know. It was a sad situation.
So are we starting with that part of it, or are we starting with the Gordon Hayward part? Now you have me all over the place, man.
I don't know. Yeah. I decided to go off a little bit. We can start with Gordon Hayward because that's a positive, and I won't be so depressed to start the show, unless that's what you were trying to get out of me.
What, depression? No, I've never tried to get depression out of you, Ray. Yeah. I like the joyful, happy Ray. That's why I asked for the music, man. I don't know what else you want from me. I don't know how much more celebratory I can get than asking demanding music.
Well, but, that was just my reaction to start the show. We can start with the big stuff, though. We can start from the top.
Yeah. All right. So, things were looking, shall we say, a little on the dicey side for the Celtics at one point in this offseason, right? I mean, moves were happening around the NBA. The Celtics weren't really a part of any of them. And it sort of felt like Paul George was traded before the Celtics got Gordon Hayward. We'll get to the Paul George side of with the Celtics when we get to the George trade. But, Celtics fans were sort of, getting a little nervous about, how much this team's really going to improve in the offseason. Like, are they going to fail in all their plans? Gordon Hayward supposedly started looking really closely at Miami, and there were reports that Miami was the favorite at one point over the weekend.
Did you buy any of that? Because honestly, I was not deterred about Gordon Hayward one bit by any of that. I was confident the entire time that he was going to come to the Celtics if he wanted to win. However, I thought overall he was going to stay at home in Utah because that's where his family was and that's where he could make the most money, even though technically it's not a ton more. But I expected him to stay in Utah, but with the caveat that if he wanted to have the best chance of winning, he was going to come to Boston. So overall, my thought was that he didn't necessarily care about the winning aspect. I was wrong on that, and I'm happy that I'm wrong on that because I'm glad he's here. But I didn't suspect Miami for a second. If he chose Miami over both of those other situations, Utah and Boston, he would be a fool. A complete and utter fool. And I think that Miami was just there to show the other two teams that there actually was interest out there. So Danny Ainge couldn't lowball him or something like that. Utah obviously wouldn't do that, but I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too far into it, but I think that the Miami situation is somewhat of a joke down there. So he made the right decision, and there was only one wrong decision in my opinion, because Utah would have been a correct decision on his part as well.
I don't believe that the interest was fake from Miami thing. I mean, I think Miami was trying to get a match.
No, no, no. Of course not. I think interest was fake from his point of view. If somebody thought that was saying that they were the clear favorites just to start the process, I didn't believe any of that for a second.
I mean, I definitely think that in retrospect, what you're saying has some merit. But I was a little bit skeptical at the time, and I've been skeptical of a lot of things being leaked out to the press, including the Celtics part and the Celtics supposed offer for Paul George, which we'll get to in a little bit. But, yeah, I was also skeptical when that report released because the driving force behind it was that, like, supposedly Haywood was, like, really impressed with Spoelstra. But the thing is like, the main driving force behind him going to Boston in the first place, like, the idea was his relationship with Brad Stevens. So I find it hard to believe that he'd be so impressed with Eric Spoelstra and him meeting, as opposed to, like, who's been his coach, like, since high school, that was the element that was going to swing him to Miami. If the reports were, like, he just really doesn't want to live in Boston, then, you know what I mean, then maybe I could, like, be like, well, I can understand that argument. But the argument they were making for, like, why he was interested in Miami, you're right, it seemed a little like one of those reports that somebody in the Miami organization leaked out.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it didn't seem,
yeah.
I didn't buy into the fact that he would ever go to Miami. I thought it was Boston or Utah, and I thought that Utah had the advantage. So I was wrong in that regard, and I'm happy that I was.
So
overall,
why would Utah have the advantage? Yeah, I kind of feel bad for Utah the same way I feel bad for Oklahoma City. Not because of the Paul George trade, but just in general as an NBA destination. Because I'm just like, okay, they had Stockton and Malone, right? But like Karl Malone left in, 2001, and since then they really haven't had a star like want to stay past their unrestricted free agency contract. You know, Karen Williams wanted to leave. Carlos Boozer, whatever you want to say about him, was sort of a star at the time, wanted to leave. Gordon Hayward is the version of that. I don't know how good you actually think Gordon Hayward is, and that's an interesting topic of conversation you can get into a little bit. But if you're the Jazz, you really don't have anyone ever staying with your organization. Like, Gobert is probably next in line, right? I mean, if you're Gobert, do you really want to stay with this team? I realize they just traded for Rubio. Who knows how long he'll stay, but it's not like Rubio's a star. I don't know. I just feel bad for teams in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he was there for 7 years, he had built up a family there, even though his son is pretty young, but it seemed like the whole money situation, just even though it's not a ton more comparatively, I just thought that they would have had the advantage just because it's easier to stay where you are than to move on somewhere. But obviously he wants to have a better chance of winning. He wants to be coached by Brad Stevens again. And Boston is a good spot as far as playing with talented players are concerned, because they have a former all-star in Al Horford on their team, and they have a MVP vote getter in Isaiah Thomas. You can't say that about the Utah Jazz. So as far as all that is concerned, sounds like I'm saying Boston was the better place to go. And as far as winning is concerned, it definitely is. I just thought that Utah would have had the advantage because they were the hometown team. And I thought that he was kind of a hometown guy, but I guess, and not his growing up hometown, I just mean his first NBA stop, I thought that he might stick around there. He did not. So, listen, Utah I think they have a talented team, especially now that they got Rubio. I think that they can still be a playoff team, and I don't know if they're going to win 50 games again, but I still think that they will make the playoffs this year and be formidable, because Gobert it seems to be on a mission here to prove everybody wrong. We'll see about that. But overall, the Hayward thing is great, right? It's excellent. The Celtics improved just by that token. They could have lost a couple other players on this team along with Avery Bradley, and Gordon Hayward would have more than made up for that in an overall sense.
Okay, so where are you at on this, Gordon? Obviously, you're you know, happy you signed the deal, but where are you at on Gordon Hayward as a player overall? There was this interesting notion that with the leaving of Paul George and Jimmy Butler to the Western Conference, on ESPN's list of the top 15 players, 14 of them are now in the West. Everyone, basically, other than LeBron James, is now in the Western Conference. Does that, not that those two were like on teams that were liable to sort of compete with the Celtics next year anyway, but do you think Hayward is enough, if not to compete with the Warriors? Like, would you, how would just going to the season, how would you, like, think about their chances against a team like the Cavaliers?
Well, I was just saying to a coworker earlier today that I'm shocked that Cleveland hasn't done anything, really, right? I mean, I'll pull up their team right here just to make sure that I'm not lying about that, but I'm pretty sure that they haven't done anything in the off season. So while I don't know if the
Calderon.
Celtics Calderon, please. We can get to Calderon for about 5 seconds. But I think that the Celtics have gotten closer to Cleveland with this Hayward stuff. And I like the addition of Marcus Morris, actually, because I think that he's going to be a guy that can actually guard LeBron James at times. So they're going to rely on Crowder to do that as well. And who knows, maybe some Marcus Smart guarding LeBron in a series like that. But I think Morris will come in handy there. And if they need size against that team, I think the signing of Baines is going to help. So the Celtics have gotten closer to Cleveland, and this is kind of cliche, but and a lot of people are saying it, so it's not an original thought necessarily, but I agree with it. They also have sort of separated themselves from Toronto and certainly separated themselves from the Washington Wizards. So that puts them in a pretty good spot, and it's just a matter of how well the pieces around LeBron play this coming season as to whether or not the Celtics will be able to beat Cleveland in a playoff series, because overall I'm still not sold on it, but I think that they have a better chance than anybody else in the Eastern Conference.
It's interesting what trading Avery Bradley does to sort of this lineup, right? Because the Celtics are going to look dramatically different in their starting lineup next season because okay, they traded Avery Bradley, for Marcus Morris. Let's just get to the Avery Bradley trade now because it's sort of connected to this scenario. Obviously, you know, we knew like one of those guys was going to have to be traded, and there is the notion that Avery Bradley is going to be a free agent after next season. There's sort of not really a way they could have brought him back and paid Isaiah Thomas after next season. Right? We've talked about this aspect of it many times. So you can say, okay, the handwriting was on the wall with Bradley, although in a sense maybe it wasn't, because Jay Crowder almost got shipped to Utah to get Gordon Hayward first of all, to connect this to Hayward, do you like hold out any sort of amount of resentment for Gordon Hayward for like just if he had taken, you know, $1 million less than the max, then
yes.
You know, the Celtics wouldn't have had to do this move in the first place. I've seen some.
Yes,
some
a little
sort of
bit.
Like...
I do. That thought does cross my mind. And while I understand he wants to get paid, everybody wants to get paid, but he's kind of having his cake and eating it too, right? He came to win, but he's also making sure that he gets the most money that he can, and maybe sacrificing a little bit of the team's ability to win along with that, because I feel like having Bradley here would have been a better situation than what they're in right now. And maybe Ainge wouldn't have been able to get anything for Bradley in return going forward. Maybe they would have had to just let him walk away. But they could have gone over the luxury tax line and the salary cap to pay him next year if it came to that. So if he had a monster season for the Celtics and he deserved it and they wanted to keep him around, then maybe the ownership would decide that they would pay that extra tax and keep the team together, depending on how far they went, right? So I just feel like they would have had a better shot with Bradley and being able to ship off some of those lesser pieces or waive some guys or what have you to make up the difference. Instead, Hayward gets paid and he comes to a place that gives him the best chance to win. So I don't like that he's kind of playing both sides of it, but I don't blame him for that either, because everybody deserves to get paid as much as they can.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. Like, I sort of see both sides of it as well. I think that, like, you're right. Especially he doesn't owe the Celtics anything, because they're his new team, and they're the ones who sort of made the max offer to him before they had max cap space. So, like, from that perspective, I don't know. I'm guessing they didn't go to him and say, look, like, we're a million short. Is there any, like, they probably didn't want to upset the apple cart with him, and
sure.
I'm sure, like, that idea never even came up. So it might be a little unfair to, like, place it on his shoulders in terms of greed and not being willing to take less. Because it wasn't offered.
And if they didn't suggest it, then, I mean, the player's certainly not going to suggest it. I'm not going to go in there and say, hey, I'll take a hometown discount. It's not my hometown, you know?
Yeah. And you also can't blame them for not suggesting it, because, like, especially when he hasn't made his decision yet, you're not going to put him in a situation where, like, he's going, oh, well, they're just not offering me. Now you're giving him another reason to stay at home in Utah when he might be 50-50 on that anyway, right? So I really can't blame either side on this. It just feels kind of crappy that it's, like, over such a small amount they essentially had to trade Avery Bradley. But I think in the long run they were sort of going to have to trade Avery Bradley anyway, or let him walk after next season.
Right.
Or try to re-sign him and let Isaiah walk. You know my thoughts on that, but it doesn't seem like that's their preference. Doesn't seem to be to let Isaiah walk right now. So, or maybe it is. I don't know. I don't know anything with age, but they wanted to let someone go. It looked like for a moment it was going to be Crowder, and I think Celtics fans probably would have found that more palatable. I don't know. The question is, would you have been happier getting rid of Crowder, and taking on a player with less value than Morris in exchange in just signing Gordon Hayward and sort of having that be the price to clear that cap? Or do you like the fact that you traded Bradley, who you probably like better than Crowder, in exchange for, you know, getting a guy like Morris back who can be valuable?
Well, I'm not going to talk out of both sides of my mouth. I just criticized Gordon Hayward / the Celtics for allowing him to have both money and the chance to win. So I would be a fool to say that trading away Crowder would be something that high on my list, because I've been touting his contract as one of the best contracts in the league for the last 2 years. And I still feel that way as far as value is concerned for what he gives you on the court. So trading him wouldn't have been easy either. And I do like the fact that they were able to get Marcus Morris back. But for this current season, I think having Bradley instead of Crowder would make this team better. He's just a better player all around. Yeah, I think he fits the system a little bit better. But you know what? Crowder gets the job done, and I think Ainge just loves his contract. And at first I thought that it was going to be a commodity to be able to trade that contract, because people would want it. But the salaries are going up so much, it's almost as if it's not going to help anybody reach the floor or whatever. So they don't value the contract as much as I expected them to, but the Celtics still get production out of him and are able to add players around that contract. So it makes sense that they kept him. I feel like the product on the floor this year would be better with Avery Bradley. But again, the problem is what happens after this year. This is the beauty of Danny Ainge. And if Ty Ray was listening right now, he would call in and salute me for saying this, because everybody questions Danny Ainge and they question what he does and all this stuff. He always ends up seeming to have gotten, not always, but oftentimes ends up seeming to have put the team in a better position for the next few years, not just the next year or two. So I think that he's done that here. He's given them more flexibility in the next few, like 3 to 4 years. He's going to give the younger guys that they have a chance to play and earn their spot on the roster and maybe give themselves a little bit more value. And I think that it's a bigger picture thing that he has done here. And a lot of people are very short-sighted and they don't see that bigger picture. I see it. It just hurts. You know, it's a painful situation because I love the player. I thought he was my favorite player on the team. Now I can't even decide who my favorite player should be. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. But it's the same thing, Calvin. I even think that Danny Ainge had foresight as to the Brooklyn Nets not being as bad as people expected them to be this year, which is why he went out. Part of the reason why he went out and got that Lakers pick, because he is thinking the Lakers are going to be worse than the Nets. So I'd rather have their pick than the Brooklyn pick that he has next year. Everybody thinks that's going to be a lottery pick, but Brooklyn doesn't look horrible right now.
That's an interesting thought, the Lakers might be worse than the Nets. The Lakers, the odds for next year in Vegas came out. The Lakers are like, they're like eighth. And anyway, the Nets are still at the bottom. But I do sort of like the moves they're making, but I feel like the more long-term moves than short-term moves. But
yes.
Let me ask you about this Danny Ainge quote that he made about let's get into the Bradley trade itself. Yeah, I like Marcus Morris. I don't like him as much as Markieff, but like I like him on this team because he's gritty, right? And the Celtics are sort of they looked grittier than the Wizards. I will give them that. But I think that outside of Smart, they like and I guess Bradley too. Like they could always use some more hard-nosed bigs, and I guess you don't really
think of
Morris. You don't
they were
really
soft
think of Morris
front.
Big
Horford is. I love what Horford does on the court. He makes things a lot easier for everyone. But he's one of the softer big men in the league. He's not as aggressive as he needs to be. And by soft, I mean mentally, like I just said, he's not as aggressive on the court as I think that he should
right.
be with his talent.
And you could say the same thing. You could say the same thing about Jay Crowder sometimes, right? I mean, the Jay Crowder of a couple years ago, sure. But like the Jay Crowder of this season, not necessarily the animal like in terms of aggression that we had seen in previous seasons.
Let's not even get into Kelly Olynyk, Jonas Jerebko. Those are the other big men that they were trotting out there. Tyler Zeller. Already, with just a couple of signings that they've made here and the trade, they are much tougher up front. And that's going to make a big difference in a series against a team like Cleveland.
Yeah, so Danny Ainge's statement was apparently that it wasn't just cap space for why they traded Bradley. But they said they have an abundance of guys they think can play the two, including Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Rozier, Smart, and Gordon Hayward. So we have a lot of guys in that position, he says. We were thin more at the 3-4. So from that standpoint, it makes sense to bring in Morris. But I don't really understand that statement because I sort of feel like the opposite. All of those guys that he mentioned, like to my mind, are more threes. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier is the one guy, right? Marcus Smart, he's just a smaller three. Like, and Gordon Hayward, all of those guys, especially, like, look, positionless basketball is what it is. 2-3 is a subtle
difference.
That's
what they're doing.
I'm not really talking about offensively. But the thing about Avery Bradley is he's the guy who defends the Kyrie Irvings of the world, the small, quick guards.
Right.
I look at that list of guys, and like I said, other than Rozier, who you know his defense came on in the playoffs, but like was not really a great defender to my mind before near the end of the season at least. Who knows how that'll translate? All those other guys. Like, even Marcus Smart, who is a great defender, Marcus Smart can't really defend point guards that well.
Yeah.
Who is
so,
the guy?
You know what this tells me? And this is the bigger picture on this is that Isaiah Thomas is going to get a max deal from the Boston Celtics or close to one or next year. But this tells me that Danny Ainge is finally pushing the issue. And he's found a coach that agrees with the issue that he has been wanting to have his entire life. In that it's going to be a team that is big, athletic, they can shoot the ball, they can get up and down the court, and they're probably not going to defend a lick. And they are going to try and outscore everybody every night. And if it comes down to a one-possession game and Kyrie Irving is going to shake and bake somebody, well, guess what? Cleveland is probably going to win that game 60% of the time because that's what I would say. Kyrie Irving is – if he's going up against Isaiah Thomas or even Marcus Smart for that matter, 50 to 60% of the time he's gonna hit that shot. So, but overall, I think that they're going for the look that Ainge has been asking for his entire career, basically, since he was with the Suns. This is the game he loves. He wants them to run and gun up and down the court. He wants them to score 150 points. And as long as they win the game, I don't think that he's going to care a whole lot about defense. And that's kind of the way it's looking to me, because Gordon Hayward, solid defender, but not a great defender. So who's their best defender right now on the team? It's Marcus Smart, right?
It's Marcus Smart, yeah. Or Horford.
And after that?
Different type of defender, but...
Horford?
Smart or Horford, I mean, they do different... Horford's more of a, yeah, a team defender, but he has an
right,
you know, argument for overall defensive value.
But Horford's not going to guard Kyrie Irving either. He's not going to guard Kevin Durant.
No.
He's not, I mean, nothing like that. He's a team-help defender, and that's... Maybe that's part of the reason that they're going in this direction as well, because Horford is such a good team-help defender. They're going to line it up with a bunch of guys that can get up and down the court, and if they get blown by on defense, they're going to trust their big men in Horford, Zizic, Baines, and now maybe Morris will get in on that grit. I feel like you're going to see a different type of defense from the Celtics this year. There's going to be a lot more collapsing and letting guys get into the paint, just the way things seem to be shaping up, because they're not going to have a stopper on the wing.
Is it Zizic? I've been pronouncing it Zizic the entire time. I guess
I don't know. I don't know how to
pronounce
it.
I've only seen it on paper, so I had no idea.
It's probably Zizic, or I'll get it by the time the season rolls around. The point is that he's going to be a guy that they're going to hopefully rely on to be tougher than Tyler Zeller, you know?
Yeah, probably slower than Tyler Zeller as well, but I guess I said we'd get into summer league next week. But I guess I hear what you're saying, but I don't understand in that scenario you're describing. The thing about Avery Bradley is he's sort of the perfect guy to pair with Isaiah Thomas. In fact, I got in this argument with somebody in I think it was an email or something. I can't remember what it was. But I ended up looking it was about Avery Bradley's all-defense snub and how his defensive numbers didn't look good. And they tried to make the argument like the Celtics played in a lot of three-guard lineups. But Bradley didn't play in that many three-guard lineups because essentially – when Isaiah Thomas has been on the floor this season, like Bradley has been with him basically the entire time, or to a lesser extent Smart, but like the majority of his minutes have been like with Amir Johnson as well. Like somehow their starters' minutes had all been paired together, and in Bradley's minutes were synced with Isaiah. Isaiah played some minutes with Smart, but my question is like the Kyrie Irvings of the world, He sort of is protection for Isaiah's defense, Bradley is, because he can defend those smaller guys. As good as Smart is, I wouldn't want Smart on Kyrie Irving for an entire game, right? So I don't know.
Maybe, right.
Do you think Rozier ends up being a starter and Smart continues to come off the bench this season?
Man.
Or I don't know.
I think you're going to see a lot of different starting lineups from this team. I think Stevens is going to tinker around and he's going to try and play the matchups. And I've been saying this for a couple of years, and he always tends to try and stick with the starting lineup. But I think that was more out of respect for Amir Johnson than anybody else, because he's a veteran and he is a guy that has been around. He's paid his dues, and I think Stevens respects that. So when you look around this roster, you don't really have a guy like that that's going to step in and be that always starting center, unless you think it's Aaron Baines, who hasn't really played a whole lot in his career up to this point. So you're obviously looking at Isaiah and Horford and Hayward and probably Crowder, right? And after that...
Oh, you think so?
I think Crowder will probably
Crowder,
start.
Right?
But after that, I'm not really sure who it's going to be. That's where it's wide open and where somebody needs to step in.
Then it'd be Isaiah.
No, I said Isaiah and Horford and Hayward and Crowder.
Oh,
that's
okay.
That's four. And then who's
so
the fifth? I'm not sure who that fifth would be, whether they would decide to plug a Morris in and go a little bit bigger, or they would put in Jaylen Brown or Tatum. That's what I'm saying. I think there's going to be
–
that Stevens is going to look at the team across from him and say, well, these guys don't have anybody over 6'9" in their starting lineup, and they're all between 6'3" and 6'9", so let's throw Jaylen Brown out there tonight. Whereas – if they need to go a little bit bigger, maybe he goes to Baines or Zizic or even Morris. We'll have to wait and see. I think that the way things are shaping up, he's going to be able to mix and match, and there's not going to be a set starting lineup unless somebody outside those top four players that I just named blows him away. And maybe it's Marcus Smart. Maybe Marcus Smart is the veteran on this team, or he is the veteran on this team now. He's been there the longest. Maybe he's the guy that they just trust to get things done, and he steps in. But like you just said, he's not the guy you want guarding the quickest guards in the league for an entire game.
It's just interesting to me how one trade sort of changes the make. I realize, you know, Olenek left and there were a couple of other moves. But there's like it seems like one major move changes the feel of the set, and I guess signing Hayward as well, changes the feel of the Celtics from a team that might be too small to a team that might be too big. I don't know. I guess we'll find out, but it's interesting.
Wouldn't say too big because they were definitely – it's just one small player for one big player that they've swapped basically. They were big before. They just weren't tough as far as big guys were concerned. I think they're definitely tougher now, so I wouldn't say they're too big. I'm going to throw the phone number out there, 323-642-1484, because somebody is on our board. But I want to also mention that if you want to come on the air with us, you got to press 1 or else I'm not going to know it. So the number looks familiar. I'm not going to go to it unless I see that indicator pop up. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure who it is. But just so the person knows, if you want to come on, press 1, please, and I'll go to you. Because if it's you, then it's been a long time. Anyway, so yep, there he is. I knew it. It's got to be Mad Dog Calvin. It's a 207.
Mad Dog. Right.
It's a 207. It's got to be Mad Dog. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Yeah.
What's up, Mad Dog?
There he is. Back from the dead. What's up, man?
Not much. I saw that you guys were on. A lot going on with basketball in the last month or so, and I saw your thing on Twitter, Rory, and there's definitely a lot to talk about.
Yeah, what do you want to get into?
Well, I want to get a little bit into the Celtics, of course, and I wanted to get into a little bit. I noticed on your show thing that you were gonna on your docket that you guys were gonna discuss Lonzo Ball. I also have an opinion about that as well.
I bet you do.
And so. As far as the Celtics go, they're talking about big, small, defense, offense, and everything. The thing that Hayward does is that it adds more talent to this team. It adds more talent. You're better than you were a week ago.
Definitely. Definitely.
Nobody
you are.
That. Yeah.
So,
yes.
I mean, however the pieces work, you're better than you were. And this team still, in my opinion... And it's remarkable that this team in the conference finals lost by, I think it was, 102 points in the four games that they lost. They were outscored by 102 points combined. So that's a little over 25 points a game. So they're obviously not.
They got killed.
They're not close, and I know that they won a game three in Cleveland, and still that compounds the problem more. The whole question is with the additions of Hayward and Tatum and everything, how much does this move the needle towards Cleveland, not so much Tatum because he's a rookie. Though I think that he'll be a good scoring wing off the bench, and I think that he'll be very good in time. But how much does this move the needle towards Cleveland?
I mean, Calvin, you didn't really answer that earlier. I don't think it moved it enough. By the way, Cleveland picked up old friend Jeff Green, so that's going to be a huge addition for them, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
We'll see how that goes there. But I would say that if I had to bet on the Celtics beating Cleveland in a series right now, I would not do it. I would say, okay, maybe they get two games this time and they don't get beat by 25 points a game like you just said there, Mad Dog. But overall, no, I don't think they're there yet. And that's why the idea of Paul George and Gordon Hayward being in Celtic Green was so enticing, because that would have gotten them even closer. But I still think that Ainge has made a play for the next 3 to 4 years, maybe even longer, if instead of this coming year, and he's just taking baby steps, and this is another one of those small steps forward. But Calvin, you didn't answer the question earlier. What do you think?
Yeah, Matt, I'm using my pet peeve statement, the thing that drives me nuts when NBA fans say is the expression "move the needle." I can't stand when people talk about moving needles. Basketball fans are heroin addicts all of a sudden. Here's my thing. Like, do I think that it makes them the favorite against Cleveland? No, I don't. And Hayward is a very good basketball player. Morris, for all the things I said about, like, I'm not sure how they guard Kyrie in this situation, I do think, like, they'll be better if not efficient, because nobody is at guarding LeBron, because weirdly Morris is like one of the most effective LeBron guarders in the league, which, again, it's not saying too much, but like comparatively, that could be a couple of point swing here and there. In fact, if you look at how, like, LeBron played against Detroit when they played 2 years ago in the playoffs, like, Morris was sort of making life difficult for him, and the Cavaliers swept him, but it was a really close sweep. In any case, like, I don't necessarily think it makes them better than Cleveland, but I don't think they have to be, like, I don't think they have to immediately be better than Cleveland. One, there's, we see how this team plays. There's a trade deadline coming up. Maybe they make another deal at the trade deadline, and maybe they don't. Maybe something happens to Cleveland with injuries, or maybe they just don't shoot well. You know what I mean? There's all these elements beyond, like, okay, we're not as good as them. That's fine, but, like, there's a reason why the games are played. Like, you should still be as good as you possibly can be, and the Celtics are sort of making progress in that direction. Their guys are getting better. Who knows what Brown and Tatum bring into this new season. Maybe they'll improve. Maybe guys gelling together who we haven't seen play together before. Maybe there's a certain way people play off each other. Maybe, the Celtics end up moving Isaiah to the bench, even though I think that's unlikely, but maybe, they find a sort of big lineup that works against Cleveland better. I don't know. There's so many variables that I think it's always worth trying, especially of getting a guy of Hayward's caliber. And again, Hayward's not one of the best players in the league, but he's an all-star caliber player, and he defends well too. So I don't think there's any downside in getting him.
Calvin, I want to circle back on the Paul George stuff in a little bit, but I'm curious to see what Mad Dog's thought on Lonzo Ball is. So, Mad Dog, what do you see with Lonzo Ball here? Because he's been equally criticized and praised throughout the first few days of Summer League.
Well, and I just want to say, I think it moves them closer to Cleveland. I still don't think that it makes up the average margin of defeat 25. It may move it to 10 or 15, but it's still not there to where you're going to have to beat Cleveland. But as far as, and Calvin, this is a question for you, because you are the Lakers guy here, you know just about everything about the Los Angeles Lakers. So I want to know about, and this is what my opinion about Lonzo Ball is. The Summer League is not organized basketball. It's not fundamental basketball. It's a bunch of guys just trying to show off their skills. It's what I always look at Summer League as Lonzo Ball struggling going. I think it was 2 for 15 the other night. I think that Lonzo Ball is going to be what what he's advertised to be. I think that he will be a great passer. I think that he'll make guys better. I think that he will that he will set guys up. Do I think he's ever going to be a scorer as a point guard? No. I think that he'll be adequate at it. I think that he has a long way to go as a scorer in this league, but I think that he will be a very effective player, and he will make them better. Now, how much better? I don't think you guys are going to be great in the West this year with how loaded the West is, but I think that you will that he will in time become a very good NBA point guard, and all this stuff and just all of this build up for a summer league game. It's just again, this isn't structured basketball. You can't take too much from it, and that a lot of these guys on these rosters are not going to be on NBA rosters. And so I personally never take much out of summer league play, but I just want your opinion overall on Lonzo Ball. What do you think what do you think of him as a prospect? And I also wanted to ask you, Calvin, and then I'll just listen to you guys. Is that what do you think about Brandon Ingram going into his second year? Obviously, he had some struggles last year. I told people that he may need a year physically to adapt. He's gained a little bit of weight, but he hasn't put that much on. I'm just wondering what your impression of him. Obviously, it sounds like Magic has a very high opinion on him, and I would just like your opinion about Lonzo and him, and what direction you think that the Lakers are headed. But guys, it's great to be back on with you guys. And it's definitely an exciting time now for the NBA. We just went through all of this crazy free agency stuff, and for us Celtics fans, we are going in the right direction. It may not be immediate, but we are going in the right direction. All right, peace out, guys.
All right, so
all right, lots to take in there, right, Calvin.
So,
what do you say?
Yeah. So I'm going to avoid talking about my overall thoughts on summer league too much, because I told you we'd be saving that for next week and sort of the impressions of how guys have played, because who knows what topics we'll have next week. We have so many other things to get to. So I'll save the overall sort of summer league impressions, even on Lonzo, till next week, but you can just talk about him and Ingram overall as players, if you don't mind. And you know, feel free to react as well. My thing on Lonzo is, like, yeah, his athleticism is not through the roof. And it's never going to be through the roof. The thing about Lonzo is, like, he's, you know, pure instinct for player movement, court vision, all these things that, like, sound boring on paper, because he's not, even though he is 6'6 and, like, does have some pretty good dunks, his like, off-the-dribble game is not fantastic. But the one thing he did in college phenomenally, or one of the things he did, he shoot the ball in terms of, like, range, and not just to juxtapose him against Ingram, like, Ingram also shot the ball pretty well in college, but he shot, you know, a lot of college threes, sort of 20-foot threes, and that shot so far hasn't translated to the NBA. And, like, that's the main – like, Ingram missed a lot of shots last season. If you follow the Lakers at all, like, he was like, a lot better near the end of the season. He was also terrible defensively in the first half of the season. Now he's sort of – he's, like – he doesn't have the quickest feet because he has that length, the wingspan. He can block people from behind, or basically he doesn't really even have to be that close to the guy he's defending to block him. So I think now that he's sort of getting the spacing down better, like, he's been a lot better as a defender sort of as well at the end of the season and coming into the summer league, whatever on that. But the point is like, I Ingram is on a good track, except I think that he's going to have to learn how to shoot at some point. Lonzo, I believe, can shoot. It's just a matter of, like, you know, can he get that shot off quick enough in the NBA? That remains to be seen. But I think just as sort of a ball handler and a passer and a distributor, I think worst case scenario, if Lonzo can't get that shot off, then Lonzo is Ricky Rubio. because he can rebound.
Yeah, man. I was gonna say he at best, like, highest ceiling, he reminds me of Jason Kidd, not Magic Johnson. You know, like, people are dubbing him the next Magic. That's ridiculous. I don't think this kid can really shoot. And I've said it before. I said it even after just seeing him for what, 4 or 5 games over the college season. I didn't see a lot of his games, but what I saw, I didn't think that he was that great of a shooter. Now, he's made some deep shots in the summer league, but he's also taken some really bad shots. And I think that unless he kicks that habit of taking bad shots, the coaches are going to clamp down on that at some point, and they're not going to let him take those shots because he's not going to be on the floor. And, I mean, maybe for the first year or so, they let him run free and take whatever shots he wants. But at some point, if he's not taking good shots and he's just forcing it and not getting his shot off as quickly as he needs to, they're going to have to put a stop to it and have him focus on the passing and running of the offense. So I'm just not sold on him as a superstar type of player. We'll have to wait and see.
But if you're an analytics guy, it's the opposite. It's he takes no bad shots. Like, that was really the criticism of him coming out of the draft. It was like, does he even have a mid-range shot? Because he took 7 mid-range shots all season. If you look at his...
No. See, now you're getting into a different definition of good or bad shots. I'm talking about shots that were out of early in the shot clock, or just out of rhythm in the offense, or a shot that was defended when he could have given it to somebody else and worked a different play. That's what I mean by a bad shot. I'm not looking at analytics here, whether you're taking a shot at the rim or you're taking a three or you're right inside the line. I don't care about that. I'm talking about from just looking at it with your eyes. He doesn't seem to make good decisions about when he's going to shoot.
So if you're not counting when they go in, then you might be accurate. Because if you look at his in college, his like shooting percentages in terms of his true shooting and all that stuff were miles ahead of even Fultz. He's like 15% higher than Fultz. Like, his shooting percentages in college were phenomenal. If anything, you can criticize him for passing up shots too often. And that's something that I saw in the summer league, being too passive, being a guy who, you know, when a guy is on him, not even like trying, because he doesn't hold the ball at all, he makes passes or sort of tries to do one move immediately, and if that isn't there, he passes the ball. That in my mind is what's going to hold him back from being a superstar type player, if he's even accurate enough with the shot, is that he doesn't have the mentality that it takes in this NBA to like become that superstar. He just doesn't care. Like, not that he doesn't care. It's he like his style is to just like get rid of the ball so quickly that I have a hard time even imagining him taking that many shots in an NBA game consistently. And
well, that
like
would
I
be
said,
good.
The shots that he does take it's either a layup or a three. Like, that's literally every single one of his
well,
shots.
That would be good for
one
you.
One of those two things.
That would be good for you, but all I'm saying is now what, after a couple summer league games, I've seen him play maybe 6 or 7 games between college and summer league. Maybe I'm biased here, but I tend to think that he's forcing shots and just taking shots that if I were a coach, I would say, you need to either get more open before you take that shot or work it around and run the play again, because there's plenty of time on the shot clock and you force that thing. That's just the way that I've looked at him. And I don't know. We don't want to really
get too deep
into the summer league stuff.
The summer league aspect of him we'll get into more next week. In fact, let's just move on from him entirely. Because I sort of feel like I touched on him. Like I said, Ingram needs to learn how to shoot. If or when he develops that outside shot, I think his star outlook, his ceiling is much higher than Lonzo's. I think it's like the notion that like Brandon Ingram was a bust. Like I found he's weird even last year. Like, he got off to a slow start, but like could see all the potential in the world there with that guy, and I would not bet against him.
I have to question a lot of these guys' conditioning, and I know that's another summer league topic. We can dive into it next week, but it just seems like more and more every year. Maybe teams are just being cautious, but it seems like guys are getting hurt left and right here as they come into the league younger and younger. Anyway, let's circle back to one of the bigger moves that has happened over the past couple weeks. one that the one that got away, really, right? The
yeah.
big fish that Ainge supposedly had on the line, and he he didn't put the right bait on, or he didn't reel it in quick enough because it got off the hook, and Paul George has been shipped to Oklahoma City for a bag of basketballs and an Italian sandwich.
Yeah, before we get to the Celtics part, let's just talk about the trade overall. Okay, so Paul George goes to Oklahoma City for in exchange for Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis.
Yeah, so I guess Sabonis is the sandwich and Oladipo is the bag of balls.
What a terrible trade for the Pacers, and what a great trade for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Regardless of like whether or not Paul George is going to leave Oklahoma City at the end of the year, spoiler alert, he is.
I don't think you should be that confident. Did you hear what he said today? And that he would be a fool to leave if they got to the Western Conference Finals? I don't know, Calvin.
You're seriously getting fooled by this? Let me ask you this question. If you're
I'm not getting fooled by it, but I think that you're showing a little bit of overconfidence here.
I'm not even 100% confident he's going to the Lakers. I'm simply 100% confident that he's leaving the Oklahoma Thunder at the end of the year. That's where my 100% confidence comes into play. But, Murray, let me ask you this question. You're Paul George, right? You just got traded to the Thunder. You left the Pacers. You got crapped on by the fans somewhat. You had to sort of deal with this ordeal. You tried to make it look like, you were trying to do the best thing for the organization, but people still in Indiana are still mad at you. You arrive at Oklahoma City. What are the odds that if you're asked about whether or not you want to leave at the end of the year to go to the Lakers, that you're going to say, yeah, I probably don't want to stay here at the end of the year and go to the Lakers, considering the fact that Oklahoma City can still trade you.
He doesn't have to come out and say that to squash the rumors that he wants to leave. But at the same time, the way he said it, the way he put it, he doesn't have to say that either. He doesn't have to make himself look even more like a fool next year if they end up going to the Western Conference Finals. He's left the door open to do whatever he wants to do, and that's why I think that you shouldn't be that confident that he would just leave. If he and Westbrook play well together and they end up being the next big tandem and the Steven Adams steps up and the rest of the team plays really well and they go to the Western Conference Finals, he would look like a fool for walking to the Lakers or somewhere else.
No, he would look like a fool for walking to the Lakers if someone else wasn't going there. But, Westbrook himself is going to be a free agent. And then there's the LeBron thing. We haven't gotten into the Cavs yet. But, everything is going – I mean, we got into the Cavs a little bit. But everything is going down the tubes in Cleveland. Whether or not LeBron goes to the Lakers, if I'm 100% confident that George is gone, I'm a good 85% confident that LeBron is leaving the Cavaliers at the end of the next season. I mean, you look at everything that's going on with him, the way they undercut Chauncey Billups in his offer, and he ended up declining that job. Sort of the way all of their trades have fallen apart. The report about Cavalier players telling Jimmy Butler, don't come here, and Jimmy Butler telling Chicago that he didn't want to go to Cleveland. All of these things coming out, what do you think, if LeBron refusing to be involved in, any sort of trade or free agent recruitment process. When LeBron has been the guy essentially signing contracts himself for this season, all of these things make me, like I said, extremely confident. Not that he's
he's out. He doesn't care.
He's out.
That's going to be beautiful when he leaves Cleveland again. People are going to kill him, and you're probably going to be really happy because where else would he go?
I mean, I guess he can't go to the Clippers now, right? Because they sort of made their moves, but who knows? In this situation, they could end up freeing cap space somehow. But
you know what? If LeBron really wants to make a name for himself and he wants to go down as the best ever, he should pick a team that hasn't won in pretty much ever. He should go to the Orlando Magic, or I guess Sacramento's kind of gotten close at times, but Orlando sort of has too. He should go team up down in New Orleans with Anthony Davis. He should do something like that. If he really wants to stamp himself as the greatest ever, and that's the way to do it to me, is to win in multiple cities and not be chasing the Los Angeles Lakers. He should go somewhere else. That's LeBron's legacy to me, and I would actually respect him more if he did do something like that.
Yeah, but the thing is, he's already done that. He did that for Cleveland. So like that element of his legacy, he can essentially all LeBron has to do now is win more titles. He can win those titles anywhere. It doesn't like that element of the story of like going somewhere and being the guy to bring that team up from his bootstrap. He already did that in Cleveland. He already won twice in Miami. Like, he can literally do anything, and it really does not.
Yeah, but I feel like it would be more impressive if he did it at to a franchise that was literally nothing for the last 40 years, as opposed to the Lakers, who by all accounts are one of the greatest franchises in NBA history, and quite frankly, Calvin, have been an embarrassment for the last 2 years. So. If your angle is that he wants to resurrect the Lakers, then I think that's BS, because the Lakers should be able to resurrect themselves without luring LeBron in.
But you're talking about it from the Lakers side. Like, what does LeBron care about, like, protecting the Lakers' legacy? From the perspective of LeBron's legacy, the Cavaliers were a franchise that did nothing for 40 years, and then LeBron arrived and brought them to a title. So like,
right, so he's going to do it again.
I don't know why he doesn't have to do it again, though. That's the thing.
Wait,
like,
it would be more impressive if he did. That's all I'm saying. It would be more impressive if he did that than if he went to a franchise that is in shambles because of their own poor moves and tried to resurrect them. If the Celtics were in the same spot right now, it would be saying the same thing about Boston, that it would be more impressive if he were to go to Phoenix or Utah or something like that and win there as opposed to coming and helping the Celtics get back to glory, because
it'd be more impressive if Gordon Hayward went to Utah and restored them to their glory. If that's what you're talking about.
Those players aren't even on the same level. It's not even close. Come on, let's be serious here. Gordon Hayward is a top 20 player at best. LeBron James is arguably the MVP. Let's back off of that.
We're talking about what's impressive. The idea that someone has to go do the most impressive thing. Yeah, Kevin Durant, instead of going to the Warriors, should have gone to the Magic. Except then he wouldn't have a title, and you can say he should have gone to the Magic, but then he wouldn't have a title. He'd be sitting there disappointed while the Warriors or Cavs celebrated this year. Like, why not go set it up so you can win, and why not do it where you want to? But I think the whole thing with LeBron going to LA, the reason people think he's going to LA is his wife apparently wants to come here, and the whole entertainment mogul thing, which, like, don't get me wrong, there's a huge part of, again, we'll, you know, down the line we talk more about LeBron potentially coming here, but like the whole thing, while sort of cool, is also annoying. So I get it. I hate LeBron, so like I'm not 100% behind. I'd rather have Westbrook and George both come here, to be honest with you, which is like, I don't think is off the table, but.
No, that's probably the best case scenario for you.
Regardless, we went down too long a road down the Lakers. Except let me say this for the Lakers, because people are flipping out about how, like, cause the Lakers are $17 million under the cap, and they have yet to be able to find, you know, a free agent to give that $17 million to on a 1-year deal. But the thing is, it's like there's all kinds of teams have had all kinds of money in this offseason. Yeah, the cap didn't go up by as much as we thought, but there's still been plenty of money to go around. Guys are still getting huge deals. You're not going to take a 1-year, $17 million deal if you can get, you know, a 2-year, $40 million deal, or a 3-year, you know, $60 million deal. So, like, Lakers fans who are flipping out right now, it's not a big deal. There's still a chance we can, you know, the Lakers could end up with KCP. End up with somebody for 1 year who they have to overpay, but it doesn't even matter because they're going to have to spend that money one way or another anyway. So,
yeah, if it's 1 year, then who cares? They got to get there to the floor.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay.
Shall we move on?
No. We shouldn't. We shall not move on because we're still on Paul George. We just sort of went all over the place. Okay, so terrible deal because – here's the thing, Murray, going back to that conversation, is Victor Oladipo is under contract for 3 more years. So Paul George leaves. That's where it was at before we got sucked into this Paul George LeBron thing. Paul George leaves at the end of the season. Who cares? If you're Oklahoma City, who cares? You get out from under that bad contract. And Indiana stuck with that contract for 3 more years. Now their best player is Oladipo? Like, what are they thinking in that scenario, Murray? Sabonis is okay, I guess, but like he's not worth eating that contract.
I heard that. I heard that theory floated out there was that Kevin Pritchard really loves Sabonis, and I don't know how much I would believe that one. But they let's see, who did they? Who else did they lose? They also got rid of Monte Ellis. They waived him, and Jeff Teague signed with the Timberwolves, so they don't have a point guard either. They're going to go with Darren Collison, I guess, or maybe Oladipo is their point guard. I don't know if I believe that, but they do have. Miles Turner. That's the guy I was looking for. Miles Turner is their up and coming player. They're going to try and build around him at this point. So it's just a matter of how high you think his ceiling is going to be. And Thaddeus Young is who he is, you know. So they are a middling team right now, and you're right. I mean, they made themselves worse, but not bad enough that they're going to be a guaranteed lottery team. And I don't know what they're thinking. I feel like Pritchard was insulted by the fact that Ainge wanted him to wait, and they said, you know what, screw you. We're just going to make the deal. We don't believe that you're going to want to do it, so we're just going to make the deal. Bye. See you later. So I don't know. I feel like he probably jumped the gun a little bit, and if he had done it on the Celtics' terms. I don't believe necessarily the offer that was thrown out there that Ainge is trying to make you think he offered, because I think if that was the offer, they would have been stupid to not take it. But I do believe that if they had waited until the Celtics announced they were signing Hayward, that Ainge would have come up with an offer similar to the big one that it was floated out there.
I'm just going to come right out and say it, right? Danny Ainge, you know, look, Ainge, excellent GM. But when it comes to, like, how you deal with other GM scenario, and, like, Danny Ainge is basically, like, he has Boston fans on a freaking string, all right? What kind of world do we live in which Paul George is traded and 32 seconds later, there's two reports out about Celtic trades offers that were denied by the Thunder. Who do you think is releasing that information if it's not Ainge, right?
Yeah, it seems ridiculous. It's definitely ridiculous. And, you know, but that's what I mean. I don't believe that those were actual offers, because Indiana would be foolish. He's just trying to make them look dumb. But the reason that he wants them to look dumb is that they didn't do it on his terms. So, or on his timeline, I should say.
Yeah, I absolutely believe. I can believe in the idea that the first one at the trade deadline, the offer that the Pacers were offered by the Celtics, you know, all those number ones and stuff for George, because George, that the Pacers were like dumb enough at that time to think that George might re-sign with him, and there was sort of also the notion that, like, if he had gotten that all NBA contract, they could have offered him. All NBA team placement, they could have offered him a contract that was, you know, $50, $60 million higher than any other team, and the money would have made it impossible for him or more difficult for him not to sign. They were in a situation where they didn't want to move him for anybody. Maybe that trade offer happened, maybe it didn't, but, like, that's a circumstance in which I can believe it happened, and it's understandable why Indiana wouldn't take that offer, right, including even for the Brooklyn swap then, okay? But in you want to look at the trade, the offer that they made on draft day, apparently, which was, like, those three non-lottery picks don't have that much value in two starters. You know, one of them is probably Bradley, right? Because Bradley would be a free agent after the season. Maybe they think those two starters. Let's just say they made that offer. Bradley and Crowder and three lower tier number ones. Yes, it's better than the offer that the Pacers ultimately got. But, like, at the time of the draft, maybe the Pacers still thought they could get more. Like, there was never any statement that, like, hey, This offer was made 5 minutes before the Oklahoma City trade. In fact, I'm sure George's value only went down more over time, because that's how it works. Who knows if that's even a real offer? And even beyond that, I don't believe it for this reason, because there was the conflicting report that the Celtics wanted to trade for Paul George, but they were waiting for the Gordon Hayward deal. Why? They could have done that deal, like, financially, if they'd thrown enough pieces in to lower their cap a little bit by trading for George, which is what they were going to have to do anyway. But the reason they didn't do it is reportedly that they wanted to sign Gordon Hayward first to show Paul George how good of a team they were, with the idea of trying to get Paul George to extend before he was traded there. And yet, when the report of like the guys the Celtics offered to trade for George came out, there was if they offered to trade all those guys on draft night, then at that point they weren't concerned about trying to get Paul George to re-sign. But then a couple days later they were, because they were going to get Hayward, and they thought you know what I mean. Those two things conflict with each other and don't make sense. Like nobody's even bringing that up, except like Celtics fans are throwing that out there. Like, oh, well, I guess teams just didn't want to trade with the Celtics. The Pacers just hate the Celtics that much. Like you're Danny Ainge is sucking you into this conspiracy theory that doesn't exist with this like false conflicting information. This is what I'm saying, Barrett. Like I don't buy any of this for a second. Again, because Paul George was not going to re-sign with re-sign. I mean, who knows if he would have re-signed with the Celtics? What I was going to say was, Paul George was not going to sign an extension for the, like at the moment that his trade happened, regardless of how he felt about Gordon Hayward. Even if they traded him to the Lakers, that he was not going to sign an extension before he becomes a free agent. Paul George is not doing that because, one, there's still a chance he can become All-NBA next season, and two, like, why would he take away from his free agency when there's a chance that there's another free agent player who wants to play for him and with him, and he would want that option open anyway. Like, if he went to the Celtics and he wanted to stay there after a year, he would still have that option open to him, as they would be the team to have his bird right. But he would not be like, okay, you got Gordon Hayward, I'll immediately re-sign my next deal. So, like, that whole thing was such a fraudulent situation. And I saw it all out there, like, oh, well, we're gonna sign Gordon Hayward and then get George. Maybe they would have done that, but they certainly would have done that with no guarantee. And if Danny Ainge wasn't willing to do that, which the indications were apparently that as well, then like that trade was never going to happen. And that's sort of what I believe. I think the trade was never going to happen because Ainge was not willing to commit to Paul George under the idea that Paul George might leave, and thus they didn't trade for him. But instead, it's being like, you know, shuffled under this notion. And that I think that was the idea with most teams, and that's why Indiana had to take such a crappy deal, even though, in my opinion, that deal that they took, they were better off just letting Paul George go than trade for Oladipo. Anyway, sorry for the rant, but I don't buy it.
That's fine. No, Oladipo is definitely it's a handcuff, basically. They've handcuffed themselves with that contract because I don't think that he's going to be worth it going forward, and they just, I don't know, they're going to focus on him and Turner, I guess. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what happens with Indiana, but they look like they're shooting for the lottery for the next couple of years and see what happens. Yeah. With their young guys, because, I mean, Lance Stephenson, not going to get it done out there, night in, night out. Al Jefferson, love the guy, but definitely past his prime. So, Indiana looks like they're hurting.
Yeah, I'm just going to come right out and say, I'm going to make a wild prediction here, really. I haven't looked at the other teams, so maybe there's a team with the worst roster, but I'm going to say Indiana will be a bottom three NBA team. Throwing it out there. Bottom three.
Wow. That's just trying to think. What about, all right, the Knicks?
Well, they just signed Tim Hardaway Jr., man. 71 right
now. Oh, please. Calvin, get off of that, please. Will you? I'm not going to go Brooklyn on this one, even though I would really like to go Brooklyn on this. I can't. I don't know. The Lakers are up there for me, man. I don't really trust what the Lakers have going on. How about Dallas? How do you feel about Dallas?
I feel pretty good about Dallas, actually.
Really?
I mean, Dallas being bad. Pretty good about Dallas being bad.
Oh, being bad, yes. I think that they're going to be down there. And then I guess otherwise, it's not. There's not really another team that jumps out at me. You might be right about this. Sacramento, I think they're pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, Phoenix.
I guess Phoenix. So yeah, they're going to be down there. Indiana will be down there for sure.
The Magic. I'm trying to think of the other teams that are sort of in this range that we're talking.
See, the
about.
Thing about the Magic though is I think Orlando's a little bit better than Indiana. Maybe I'm fooling myself, but I don't.
Yeah,
think
I
that
do.
Orlando is horrible. I think that the fact that they still have Vucevic is good. I think Fournier is going to be take a step forward. wait and see what happens with Terrence Ross, but they also picked up Jonathan Isaac, who I think is going to get a lot of playing time with them out of Florida State, and he's a guy that might be able to help them out defensively quite a bit. So I look at Orlando to be a team that's not as bad as people might think.
I'm looking for over/under wins to try to see who I'm missing, but all I'm finding is NBA title odds. Which
I mean, Philadelphia. Philadelphia's got to be down there too. They're not that great.
Yeah, Philadelphia's a wild card there, right? They could be. I mean, Sacramento.
Miami.
I'm not a huge.
Miami hasn't really done much to improve themselves from last year, and they barely made the playoffs with the Coach of the Year candidate, runner-up, Eric Spoelstra. So, anyway.
But they were.
We have about 20 minutes left here. Do you have a list game or something?
Yeah, well, I guess we can call it a list game, sure. A list of free agents, right? How they did?
Yes.
Let's talk about Chris Paul, actually. Because Chris Paul went to the Rockets. Right?
That's right. He was traded there.
Yeah.
Sign and trade, right?
Yeah, in exchange for Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell. Isn't it Montrezl? Montrezl Harrell? Is it Montrezl? DeAndre Liggins, Darren Hilliard, Lou Williams, my boy Lou Williams, Kyle Wilcher, and a first-round pick. First of all, can we talk about one guy being traded for seven guys in the draft picks? That's an amazing NBA trade.
Right? Pretty crazy. Doc Rivers pulling the strings over there.
I mean, how many of those guys do the Clippers even have roster space for? Like, obviously, that's sort of a salary cap fitting situation. I don't know who they've cut so far. I guess they probably have Lou Williams, right, because they moved Jamal Crawford in that other deal for Gallinari. But, like, it was a situation where Chris Paul was a free agent. The Clippers sort of had to get something, so I don't blame them too much for getting Patrick Beverley, a player who I love. You're a Beverley hater, right? Is that correct, or am I wrong?
No, I don't. I think Beverley's great. I think he's a really gritty player. I think he's one of the best defensive guards in the league. He's a pain in the ass. I would love him on my team. I hate when the Celtics have to play against him, but he can be a punk sometimes. But yeah, he's a great player.
So, I don't know. Here's the thing, Ray. I'm not sold that this is going to work for the Rockets. I don't know where you're at, but everyone's like, oh, I guess the Rockets are the number two now. San Antonio moves down to three. I'm not sold this will work. Yeah, I feel like Chris Paul is going to hate James Harden. Am I crazy?
I mean, doesn't Chris Paul want the ball in his hands and he wants to be able to set guys up and he wants to score a little bit himself, whereas James Harden just wants the ball at all times?
Chris Paul is the opposite of what I was saying about Lonzo earlier, too. It's like, Chris Paul, and I'm saying this as somebody who loves Chris Paul, but Chris Paul is a dribbler. Like, Chris Paul likes to dribble around, back and forth, changing tempos, like, waiting to set up. Like, that's the opposite of what Houston's offense is. And James Harden, essentially, when he was on the floor last year, like, he had the ball in his hands constantly. They're constantly moving the ball out to three-point shooters. Chris Paul, who is a good three-point shooter, is more of a pull-up guy. He's not really a catch-and-shoot kind of guy. It's not his specialty. I realize when you have the opportunity to trade for one of the best players in the league, like, I get why you do it.
So this is the question I have for you. Is this a front office decision straight up, or do they go to the coaching staff and do they go to James Harden and say, hey, do you think you can play with Chris Paul before they pull the trigger on this thing, or do they just say, we can get Chris Paul, do it?
I think it depends on the front office. I mean, if it's Daryl Morey, I feel like he just does it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how many times have the Rockets sort of changed their team composition from year to year based on a move that Morey wants to make for whatever reason, the coach sort of has to roll with it. I think D'Antoni, even though he was Coach of the Year, I don't think he has too much power in Houston when it comes to free agency decisions or trade decisions in this case, I guess. So I think it was Morey. I get why you have to do it, because I don't think the Rockets' ceiling was too much higher than it was. And I talked before about sort of Harden flaming out in the playoffs and me having some questions there. And although you can some people would make the same argument about Chris Paul, and are there questions there? But I don't think Chris Paul has played poorly in the Celtics. In the playoffs, his teams have just come up short for a myriad of reasons. But the point is like I don't see how that offense works that well. I think Chris Paul is still a great defender. He's every bit the defender that Beverly is. So I don't worry about them on that end. I don't think, again, he's not the 3-point shooter that Beverly is on catch and shoot situations. He wants the ball a lot more, and James Harden's usage rate is extremely high. I see this team, and maybe they work it out over time. I think when you have great players, you sort of can sometimes figure out ways to work around the way you have conflicts of interest. But I don't see it working immediately, and I don't know how long Chris Paul has on the clock in terms of continuing to be a great player past, you know, the next two seasons. So I don't know. I guess I'm on both sides of this. What do you think, Ray? Overall, you feeling good about it?
I'm not sure. I don't think that they're going to really fit. I think that Paul wants the ball in his hands, and like you said, he's a dribbler. So I don't know, the way that James Harden plays, it seems like he's a very ball dominant player. He has it more than pretty much anybody in the league, shy of Russell Westbrook, I would say. I wish I had pulled up that there was some chart that I had seen that somebody was saying, if to tie this back to Gordon Hayward, if Hayward wanted to play with a superstar that was also going to allow him to handle the ball the most, it shouldn't even be Ricky Rubio. It shouldn't be, or it should have been Isaiah Thomas. And there was this list of 9 or 10 players, and I don't even remember exactly what the rating was, but they were it was basically saying Westbrook and Harden have the ball for the most amount of time comparative to their teammates in a game. And Rubio was up there and a couple other guys. And then Thomas was like 9th on the list. So the idea was that Hayward would get more touches if he came to Boston. So with Harden and Westbrook being at the top of that list, it just makes me think that Chris Paul would not really be able to fit in as far as deferring to Harden is concerned, unless he's hit the point in his career where he's going to start saying, well, maybe I should just be a spot-up shooter and I should hang out sort of on the 3-point line and defer to James Harden and win a championship that way. Maybe he thinks that this is the best opportunity for him. So we'll see. Chris Paul's game might change this year, Calvin.
Great. What about the notion, and I think we're running low on time, so we'll just wrap this Chris Paul topic up, and I'll do the baseball topics real quick that are more relevant, and we'll do like a free agency potpourri next week. What do you think about that? There are like free agency deals that I want to get to, but I just think we got 12 minutes left in the show, and the baseball stuff's not going to be relevant next week. But anyway, what about the report that like the reason Chris Paul wanted to leave the Clippers was that he hates Doc Rivers, and apparently like the notion that Doc Rivers was up, that Austin Rivers was available in the trade for Carmelo Anthony, but Doc Rivers didn't make the deal because Austin Rivers' son. And sort of like Chris Paul really hates both of them. Like, do you put any stock into that? What do you think?
I don't know, man. That's a tough one. I could totally see it because you know what? Big Baby was saying things as well about how Austin Rivers didn't deserve his contract, et cetera, and he only got his money because of his dad and all this. So it wouldn't be the first time that a player felt something like that, I guess. And it wouldn't surprise me either. But at the same time, I find it a little bit hard to believe that would be the only reason he wants to leave. Because they have a decent team there. And, I mean, if he really thinks that the coaching is what's holding them back from winning a championship, then I have news for him. Mike D'Antoni is not the reason that Houston is going to win a championship or will have potential to win a championship. It's all about James Harden down there. So he should be aware of that before going to Houston.
Yeah, I could see him more being tired of always playing with the off-injured Blake Griffin, right, and wanting to go play with James Harden. But my thing with Doc and his son is like Doc Rivers, and not to bury him here, but he's like a notoriously bad father. Like, Austin Rivers basically said, like, he and Doc had no relationship growing up. They essentially have no relationship on the Clippers now. Like, it's hard for me to think that, like, Doc Rivers just loves his son so much that he's not wanting to include him in any deals and that he's, like, trying to jam him up. If anything, it's the fact that Doc Rivers loves all his players too much. He, like, overvalues all his players. He wants to trade for his old players. I think this is just, like, an overall flaw in Doc Rivers' sort of GM mindset. And therefore, like, he, you know, didn't want to include him in the deal. But I do think, like, he should probably, trade or not re-sign Austin Rivers or have Jerry West just be the GM there, because regardless of, like, whether or not he's actually favoring his son, I feel like anytime the possibility comes up that Doc Rivers might be favoring his son, it's going to reflect, like, it doesn't matter whether it's true or not. It matters, like, whether or not Chris Paul thought it, right? And if Chris Paul thought it, then, like, you're affecting the quality of that team and whether or not he wanted to resign there. If that was really a factor, and maybe it was, like, again, Doc Rivers should find a way to, like, either divest himself of that position or divest himself of his son on the team. It sounds cool, but you know what I mean. Like, one way or another, you got to get rid of that conflict of interest, or at least the appearance of the conflict.
I agree with you there.
In any case, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So more NBA free agent trade conversation to come. Summer League next week as well. In the meantime, Roy, I just had a couple of brief home run derby things. All right?
All right. Bring it at me, because I didn't really pay attention to home run derby. I just know who won.
Yep, you know who won. Aaron Judge, like, phenomenal base player. I like that he's
rookie.
6'8". Yeah, I like that he's just a monstrous human being, because it makes you feel like, oh, maybe he's not doing steroids. I know there's this notion that the ball is juiced, but, like, honestly, who cares, right? Like, bring back steroids, I'm fine with it. I'm okay with it at this point. Like, baseball, it's just less boring with home runs, straight up.
Yeah, steroids is tough on a human being, though. Steroids is tough on the body. You don't want to bring back steroids.
Hey, man, your body, your choice. It's like, I think of steroids the same way people think about abortion.
That's fine, but I'd rather have the juiced ball and let guys be on steroids if they choose. How about that?
Okay.
Because then less guys would choose. I think less guys would choose steroids if they knew the ball was juiced.
How about this? Pitchers have to pitch with tennis balls from now on.
I don't think a tennis ball would go as far as a baseball.
Yeah, you're probably right. Because you can only hit a tennis ball so far, right? Although I've hit a tennis ball a freaking mile, so I think maybe you could hit a tennis ball that far. Anyway.
I don't know, man. I don't think a tennis ball would really carry that far. I think it would die pretty quick. Anyway, go ahead.
So you didn't watch the home run derby. Can I just say, Giancarlo Stanton is a cheater. He's an outright cheater, right?
A cheater, huh?
Yeah, he's a cheater. Here's the thing. There's a rule at the home run derby that, like, you can't be pitched your next ball until the first ball lands, okay? Giancarlo Stanton got behind in the count, the numbers. He was behind. Time was running out. And the dude pitching to him just immediately started pitching him one pitch after another, to the extent, like, the announcers were even talking about it. And nobody did anything to stop him. Stanton just kept hitting home run after home run over the wall, and thus won his first round matchup. And it was like, because it was in Marlins Park, and they probably wanted him to win. I think Major League Baseball wanted him to win. They did seedings based on, you know, he was the number two seed. They wanted him to go up against Judge. That was sort of the whole thing. They were both betting favorites. Even though they didn't get that matchup in the finale, like, that's what they wanted. But, like, I don't know, and there's also the other element of, like, I'm not sure that anything was actually on the line. I tried to, like, look up if there were any prizes given. I couldn't figure that out. So maybe you say, well, nothing's really on the line, and Stan didn't win anyway. But it was some pretty shameless cheating, right? Something should be done about this, or should we just let it go?
I don't know, Calvin. It's the All-Star game. Nothing matters about it. Nobody really cares, right? You're the only one that seems to care. I didn't even watch the damn thing. You know, it's like people aren't even paying attention to it anymore. They're trying to jazz up the ratings and make baseball fun again for people. Let them do it.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. That's fine. Well, speaking of making baseball fun again, you know they got rid of the thing where the winner of the All-Star game decides home field for the World Series?
Yes, I did know that, and that's good.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? You think that's a good thing?
I think that's great. I think that's great. Yeah, I think that the All-Star game means nothing, and that you should really they should be going to a straight sort of record type of thing, because even though it's tough to do that, because and believe me, I don't know exactly how they're determining it right now. I just know that they're going away from the All-Star game determining it. But it's ultimately you want to see what a team has done over the course of a season. If there's one team that has clearly shown that they are the better team as far as the record is concerned, then they should have home field advantages, in my opinion.
You know what I'd like to see in a World Series? How about like game one is like in a neutral field in the middle of nowhere? You know what I mean? It could be like not even in the middle of nowhere. It could be like in a different location every year. Like the Final Four sort of. It's like World Series in Indianapolis this year, game one. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That'd be a good gimmick. And then that way it sort of really feels like neither league has an advantage if both leagues play three games. I don't know. Something to think about.
I think
baseball.
I can get into
but Bryce
that.
Bryce Harper also has something to think about. Bryce Harper wants to change the All-Star game to where, like, instead of AL versus NL, it's like every play, you know, you have the two leading vote getters become captains, and then they sort of pick teams from there.
Like
do you
hockey.
Have any thoughts on that?
Hockey
yeah, like
does
hockey
that.
Did. Apparently,
or they
hockey
did that.
Got rid of that, though. Yeah. Football
didn't,
tried
didn't
it
the NFL years. Do that for the Pro Bowl one year?
Yeah. They did do it for the Pro Bowl. And this is what I'm getting at, right? Is every sport in. Baseball hasn't done it yet, but Harper suggested it. But the only sport where this makes sense to me is the NBA. Like, why hasn't the NBA done this? Wouldn't it be much more interesting if, like, just because of the politics of, like, if LeBron and Kevin Durant were captains, just to see who, like, they think the next best players were? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Who they wanted on their teams? There would be
definitely.
So much more, like, there would be so much more feelings tied into that. And it's like the NFL, it doesn't work because there's so many positions and so many specialists.
So many positions,
like yep.
There are normal pickup games. Basketball is a pickup sport anyway. Like guys just go and they pick teams or whatever.
Exactly. It'd be so much more like, oh, who should they pick next? Rather than like, okay, now we have to pick a quarterback or should I pick a running back? You know what I mean? You sort of have to have a 12-round fantasy draft as opposed to like, these are the guys that I'm picking because I think they're the best. I don't know. It'd be such a more interesting thing in basketball than even in baseball. I'd want to see it happen one year, and so therefore I'm stealing his idea and changing it to the NBA.
All right. Let's call Adam Silver and get him in on that because it sounds like fun to me.
Very good show. I know we didn't get everything in, but again, who knows what next week's going to actually have to talk about, so we're going to jam all this stuff in next time.
Yeah, no kidding. We ran through that baseball stuff in just 10 minutes, so that's good stuff. Thank you to Mad Dog for listening and for calling in for the first time in a long time, months, maybe over a year at this point. Who knows? Anyone else out there listening, much appreciated. We'll talk to you next week here on Careless Whispers. It was a good show. A lot of NBA talk, a lot of yelling. And Calvin,
yeah.
There is an echo in here. I know there is.
I
talk to you later, everybody.
Night. Everyone. Well, have a good night, everyone.
To know your song. What are you singing?
Yeah, what are you singing?
I am singing. I'm the we do a double shot, so I'm singing my first two. It's going to be Tricky by Run DMC.
Nice.
And I'm going to do you got to fight for the right to party
right.
by one of the best bands of all time, the Beastie Boys.